Hello, we are doing another episode of Vimiac's podcast, and we're talking today to Rachel. So the reason we're doing this sort of special issue of this podcast is because independent assessment is something that has been in sort of the works for a while to become a part of the NDIS now. This is a massive step backwards for the NDIS and a massive problem for those who are currently receiving this service. What independent assessment is we've put a bunch of resources up on our website if you want to find out more. But in short, it is having people's sort of disability and assessed by someone who may not have any comprehension of their needs or their experiences or issues. And that one interview or assessment can have their services greatly reduced or removed entirely, and it's a massive step backwards. So today I'm going to be talking to Rachel, who I've got here, and she's going to be giving sort of a personal perspective on this issue. How's it going, Rachel?
Good, Robin. It's great to talk to you today.
Good. So Rachel, just a heads up, just so we can point out, you are part of our consumer reference group for our NDIS people,
yes.
Aren't you? Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think I'd like to start today with one quote before you get going.
No, please. I love it.
Yeah. This is a quote from a book that Stuart Robert has written, ironically called In the Footsteps of Jesus, since nothing that he really does really sounds that Christian. But and I thought this quote really applies to everything he's done with the NDIS. So the quote is, "Please know that if there are errors, they are mine and mine alone."
That's a very good quote. And again, that's a very good point for this. So we have put up some much more informative and very well-researched resources and articles up on our website. But this is a topic that affects individuals, and that's why I'm speaking to Rachel today. I want to make sure we get an individual perspective, talk about you know, the concerns within the community, the fears, the apprehensions, and get that individual perspective. So this is going as an opinion piece more than anything. So that's a great way to start off the day. So Rachel, do you want to tell me sort of some history about yourself or sort of how this issue became on your radar?
So I'm an NDIS participant and I live in rural Victoria, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of issues regarding access to providers and access to good planners as well.
Yeah.
So the planning process itself can be really affected by the quality of the planner that you get. So there's already an inbuilt rural disadvantage with that as well,
yeah.
because in the country you tend to get people that aren't maybe not as well qualified, not as experienced, and have come from other careers into the NDIS that may not actually give them any experience with people with psychosocial disabilities.
Mm.
So it makes it very hard for them to accurately assess people in planning reviews as it is. So one of my concerns about the independent functional assessments is this idea of rural disadvantage.
Yeah.
Because Stuart Robert keeps saying that the purpose of these assessments is to address rural disadvantage, but he hasn't actually addressed why the NDIA have not addressed this issue with training their planners.
Yeah.
So this doesn't require IFAs to fix this issue. This requires better trained planners. So, and he's saying this is going to address, he's saying one of the primary reasons for the inception of IFAs is that it's going to address the difference in the amount of funding and packages between rural and metropolitan participants. So, you know, when it comes to this, they have just as much information to work with in order to decide the quantity of funding as when it comes to annual planning reviews. The process is the preparation of the same whether you live in the city or the country.
Yeah.
So What can and often is different is, like I said before, the experience and availability of planners as well. There are actually fewer planners to do reviews, and the planners themselves are likely to have, like I said, lower qualifications than city planners. And that's actually an inbuilt rural disadvantage occurs actually across all services. So also, if the NDIA have been aware of this trend of packages with lower amounts in the country rather than the city, then why haven't they focused on training their planners accurately?
So I just want to bring this down to, back to independent assessment. So what you're sort of pointing out here is this issue with trainers is sort of a microcosm of this independent assessments issue. So these issues that are already present within the NDIA when it comes to rural disadvantage, we're just chucking another layer of that onto this sort of process with putting independent assessments on there. It's another layer, it's another similar sort of people, similar lack of experience, lack of access, just going on to that service as well.
And also country participants will likely never have access to the same variety of services available in the city either.
Yeah.
And therefore they don't have the same opportunities to improve their functional capacity that city participants do. And this will certainly not be addressed by IFAs.
No. So it's not actually fixing any of these rural disadvantage issues. And in fact, just, adding on.
It's not fixing.
It's multiplying them, if anything.
Yes, it is.
I know you've got some really good talking points there, and I just want to go into a few more things for people who may not be as aware of these issues, and just to state some things that I've been reading, you've been reading and discussing as part of this prior, is it's a really good point you bring up that these people don't actually have to have any specialization into what they're assessing, into the issues and needs they're assessing.
Yeah. So according to the NDIA website as well, the people that will be doing the IFAs only need to have 12 months experience. Mm. And there's also no guarantee that you're going to get it's from a choice of allied health professionals.
Yeah.
And they're people like physios, speech pathologists, things like that. So you could end up still getting a speech pathologist to do a psychosocial assessment. So, and that's already been happening in the trial.
Yeah.
So there was a case recently of a guy that had a physio do his assessment and he had autism.
That doesn't sound very fitting, does it?
No. So I find that very, very worrying as well. And also even if you happen to score a registered psychologist, again, they only need 12 months experience.
Mm.
And it takes, not only does it take more than the amount of time they're allocating for these assessments to understand someone's, the nuances of the, you know, the depth of their disability. It's also, they need professional experience to be able to identify this. And especially when it comes to psychosocial participants, unless they have training in somatic type therapies, they are going to miss body cues and things like that of when people are dissociating and things like that. I think what also concerns me is I find often that there's this mistaken belief that people with mental illness are stupid.
Mm.
So if you come across as, you know, articulate, I'm concerned too that they're going to say, oh, well, look, you can, you know, you speak very well, you're obviously coping with life. There's so many opportunities for psychosocial disabilities to remain unrecognized and the impacts of those.
It's a lot of invisible disabilities at times, or...
Oh, yes, a lot of invisible disability.
I think a great quote I heard recently was someone saying the day you can get to an assessor is probably one of your better days anyway, and that's probably not going to give someone the full picture.
That's it, exactly. And the other thing is that when they speak about coming into your home to do this assessment, well, I have set my home up very specifically so that my surroundings don't trigger me.
Yeah.
So they're not going to see me in, you know, an environment that distresses me.
No.
Because it's set up not to do that. I've got many things in my home that I avoid having here to you know, to avoid distress. So I think that's not going to give them a good picture as well. And this idea of getting someone to make a cup of tea, or another one I heard in the the trials was getting someone to take out the rubbish. You know, this is not in any way going to accurately identify psychosocial issues.
No, not at all.
So again, the tests, there are no tests on this list that are actually going to identify the depth of disadvantage and difficulty that people with psychosocial disabilities encounter in everyday life.
Yeah.
So yeah, the tests themselves will never capture this. So this makes it the testing a very frightening proposition.
So with all these very obvious, I know this is a very speculative question I'm coming up to, with all these sort of very clear disadvantages, what do you think is the reason for this independent assessment, if any?
Well, I think the real reason is because in the last year, you know, not only have we had a pandemic of, you know, with the virus, but we've also, you know, started to get a pandemic of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And in people that didn't previously realise that they were having difficulties with, particularly in Melbourne, with the lockdowns, people have suddenly had to face a lot of personal difficulties that aren't resolved when lockdowns are resolved. So I think there's a concern by the NDIA that they're suddenly going to have a lot more people applying under, particularly under the psychosocial section. And I believe that these are a deliberate move to reduce the numbers of psychosocial participants on the NDIS. And there's a couple of reasons I say that. And one of those is that there is a website that's part of the NDIS that actually put forward some projections of the number of participants in the NDIS in each disability area in 2 years' time. So you can go to this website and I can find this and give this to you if people want to look it up.
Yeah, for people who are listening, I will be linking that on the webpage that I'll be hosting this podcast once we find it.
Yeah. And this website is really interesting because you can put in your postcode and then it gives you the current number of participants in each area and then the projected number of participants for 2 years' time. So in the area I live, those participant numbers under psychosocial have been reduced by about two-thirds in 2 years' time. Now, the area I live in has been impacted greatly by bushfires before COVID-19 ever began. It's been impacted greatly. It's a tourist area as well. So it's been impacted not only by bushfires, but then by the lack of tourists. So many people have lost jobs, businesses, all before COVID-19 started. You add that in on top, and my region in particular is really suffering with, you know, increased levels of mental illness and a lot more people seeking service. So I find these projections very, very troubling because in no way do they reflect what's actually going on in the community.
It seems like they're projecting less people more due to red tape than any societal changes addressing the current mental health crisis.
That's it exactly, Robin, yes. And my concern is that they can just now make these independent assessments impossible to capture psychosocial disability, and therefore they'll say, well, you're fine, so, you know, you'll be exited. And exited to what? As well, because of course in Victoria there's nothing, you know, there's very little to be left to be exited to.
Yeah.
Since they decimated the previous system.
I just want to just point out again, just to people who are listening to this, is that we are VMEAC. We are an organization that specializes in mental health and psychosocial disability. So all these comments I'm making are very much within the realm of how this affects psychosocial disability, but from our readings and our collaborations with other orgs, we know that there are very similar concerns within other groups and other demographics who are engaging with the NDIS and the NDIA. So I just wanted to put that brief disclaimer there. Rachel, do you have any other, I know you had a couple of points that it looks like you had written down. Is there anything else you wanted to really go into with this discussion?
Let me think. Just that, again, the way that the rules keep changing so quickly with what you can and can't do with the NDIS.
Yeah.
It concerns me that Stuart Roberts' other big change that he wants to make about that he will become the sole arbiter of what is reasonable and necessary.
Yeah.
That concerns me greatly as well, because it means that even before independent assessments come in for current participants, they can change the rules so much that you can't use the plan you currently have.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will shut it down. There's several ways that they can really significantly disadvantage people whilst saying to the public, these people are still on the NDIS, they're still getting packages. What a great, you know, look at what a great job we're doing.
Yeah.
So my concern is that these assessments are basically going to, you know, in a lot of ways, I think they're going to assess people right off the edge of a cliff. And that really concerns me.
Yeah, no, it seems very counter to that idea of the NDIS in its sort of early days as something to create more stability for people with disability, which is something I remember being, the word stability and security was such things I remember being bounced around in those early days when people were advocating for the NDIS. So it's very runs in counter to those ideals that started the service in the first place.
Yes. And again, the fact that suddenly at the moment, for my last plan review, they insisted upon getting an extra report from an OT. But suddenly,
can you just say OTs, what an OT, can you say what an OT
occupational,
is?
An occupational therapist.
Yep.
So they were one of the most highly regarded of the allied health professionals whose reports the NDIS would request.
Yep.
So I had one of these reports requested for my last planning review, but now suddenly OTs and your entire current treating team who know you really well, their reports and their assessments of you are going to be totally discounted, and you're going to be assessed by someone that's never met you for, it could be for as little as 20 minutes. They're saying 3 hours, but the 3 hours also includes report writing.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's important to say, like, and I think this is something that a lot of people who haven't, you know, delved too far into the medical system and the support system, it takes a lot of time and effort to find a support network that works for you and to find psychologists, psychiatrists, or whatever medical professionals that understand you and get your issues and are there to support you properly in the ways that you need. So just some one random person is not really going to, the chance of them being the right person in 20 minutes is almost impossible.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And for me too, it's taken years to get a team of professionals around me that are really starting to help me. Yeah. And the great thing about the NDIS is that that has allowed that to happen. So the other concern I have is that psychosocial participants who are currently on the scheme have been able to suddenly get a level of support you could never get through the public system. So this is the great side of the NDIS.
Yeah.
And now there's the, you know, there's the possibility that all of that could be torn away from you and you'll be left with no support and told to go back to the you know, the shattered remains of the Victorian mental health system. And, you know, this could see people really end up in, you know, a lot of crisis, which they have no way of addressing then. So, yeah.
I think that's a very succinct and powerful point to leave this on. Thank you, Rachel, so much for joining me. That was really insightful and gave a really good personal perspective onto these changes.
Thanks very much, Robin.
Cool. And all those still listening. As I said, please keep following us. We have posted a lot of content about these changes that last this week. I have also posted a sort of link to provide you a tool to contact your local MP to sort of talk about how these changes affect you and why you don't want these changes to go through. Thank you so much for listening.